From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 268 with guest Robert Bogue, recorded Monday, May 21st, 2012. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and you're listening to Run As Radio. Thanks for tuning in. Such as it is, of course, the internet makes all these terms kind of confusing. I even said I was rolling when I started the recording, and there's nothing rolling in the digital world. My guest today is Robert Bogue, and Robert is a 9-year veteran of the Microsoft MVP program and is currently awarded for SharePoint. He writes, speaks, and creates products from many different directions: developer, IT pro, business leader, end user, and so on. And he's the author of the acclaimed The SharePoint Shepherd's Guide for End Users and a series of DVDs. Rob's a professionally trained comedian, private pilot, dog lover, husband, and father. Professionally trained father? Really?
No, you don't get any training for that.
Yeah, no, I've been faking my way through it for some 20 years now. It's gone pretty well, but I almost wish I had some training.
Yeah, I think the manuals are all still in Braille on stone.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and they keep making up new ones on a regular basis, and they're just as confused as the last time.
Yeah.
Now, we've met, I think, at the Connections Conference primarily, and you are the fellow with the shepherd's crook.
Yeah, I have. So I most often get asked, how did you get that here?
Yes.
I'll tell your listeners a little secret. It breaks down, and I check a bag, and I put it in there. I've not been brave enough yet to go through TSA with it. I have one that doesn't break down, and I've not been brave enough to try and take it through the carry-on yet.
I do my talks largely on scaling websites, so I actually built a portable data center, which is like six little 6-inch by 6-inch by 1-inch PCs that fit in a rollaway bag.
Yeah.
That you cannot check, and that the TSA does not like. I have renamed that bag Secondary Inspection.
Yeah, I've heard you talk about it a couple of times, and they're like, what is this?
Yeah, it upsets people. And you know what it is? When it goes through the X-ray machine, it just comes up black. And they don't like that.
Yeah, too much metal.
And too much electronics. But it has no batteries in it, and it has no screens in it. And so there's a few things. They eventually relax. It takes a while. But at Shepherd's Crook, I mean, it's weapon-ish.
I call it a walking aid.
Right. Good answer.
I think if I could get, like, my doctor to write me a note, dear TSA agent, Rob really doesn't need this walking stick, but he brings it with him everywhere anyway. Might help.
Maybe you need a letter from your psychologist.
Oh, great. This guy's crazy.
Give him a
stick for no reason. You don't need to talk to him. These are not the droids you're looking for.
Everything's fine. No, really.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, you're known for a series of articles around SharePoint, and my two favorites are the 7 keys to SharePoint success, but one I like even more is the 7 signs your SharePoint project's in trouble. And that's an old article. That's from back when, you know, where the whole concept, I have a problem, I'm going to solve it with SharePoint. Now I have two problems.
Right, you know? Exactly. Yes, I have a hammer. That looks like a nail. Yeah, I took those two old articles and kind of combined them, updated them, and brought them into the 9 keys. Those articles were from 2006.
Mm-hmm. Back in the very early painful days of SharePoint.
Yeah, that's like before the dawn of time in SharePoint land, right? Most folks started using it in 2007. So it's a great set of articles because it's not like I have articles that are the top 10 things you can do technically to screw up your SharePoint implementation.
Right.
Absolutely, I've got those. But these are all the things that nobody ever tells an IT pro. Like, when you go to school and you get your new Microsoft certification and you graduate with your BS in computer science, nobody says, oh, by the way, you have to know what you're doing before you start. I, say it like that, it sounds obvious, right?
Yeah.
Like, you have to know. But how many projects have you been on where they said, we need to do foo? And you're like, what is a foo? You know, and they're like, no, it's a foo. And you're like, okay, well, define that for me.
Yeah. And well, and how many, yeah, I don't know of a software project. There's very few software projects I've been on where we didn't actually figure out what we needed to do until about halfway through.
Yeah. Yeah. You start developing and then you figure out the problem you're solving.
Yeah. Because when you start pushing back on, you know, it's that depth of requirements. You get to a certain point where the truth kind of leaks out, typically by accident.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things about SharePoint, which is so awesome, is as a platform, you can do anything.
Yeah. That's also incredibly threatening, too.
Well, and everybody gets their own idea. I cannot tell you the number of meetings I've gone to where we're talking about, you know, we want to do the SharePoint project and let's get started. And I go, okay, well, what is it? And one guy says something, you know, we want to do business intelligence, right? Insights now. And we want to blah, blah, blah. And the next guy goes, no, we don't want to do that. We want to communicate to the organization. And the third guy goes, what are you talking about? I've got a sales team that have got to get proposals out. Like, you know, and they're all saying SharePoint. We want SharePoint. But they don't, any two of them, believe the same thing about SharePoint.
And the sad part is that SharePoint can actually do a good job of all of those things.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It just can't do them all at the first try.
Well, and that's it, right? Like, what is V1 going to be?
Mm.
Right? Like, V2 can be something too different, an addition or whatever. But what's V1 going to do? And I feel like people get into this mentality of like, well, the thing I want is the most important thing. Well, of course it is to you.
Yeah. It's the old, all the people starving in China mean nothing to someone with a sore thumb.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But you do have to, and I'm walking us back to this 9 keys document you put together some time ago, just this idea of actually having a shared vision. What can we commit to for version 1?
Yeah, it's amazing. So I have some fun. I'm going to pick on you here for a second.
Okay.
What does collaboration mean?
Excellent question. Terribly abused word, but I would say more than one person working on a problem together.
Yeah, that's a really good definition. The scary part is I can go into organizations, I can ask that question to a group of people, and I can get them to not agree on a single definition.
Sure.
Most of the time, they actually don't answer me, and so I offer up my own. And the dictionary definition, one of the dictionary definitions, is to conspire with the enemy. When you offer that up in a meeting, there's the 2 seconds of pregnant pause. Like, did he just say that?
Yeah.
And then they finally get it. They're like, yeah, we should probably learn how to define that. I'm like, well, you know, it'll make success easier.
Yeah. Well, anyway, but I love that idea. What you did was you laid down, this is clearly what it isn't.
Right.
But is actually an accurate description of the word.
Yes.
I love it. Brilliant.
That's that professional comedy stuff coming in.
But, you know, I deal with the same sort of thing. What you do is go outside the comfort zone to clearly point to, okay, so we know there is a line, right? Isn't that Churchill's old thing? I've already figured out you're a prostitute. I'm just trying to figure out the price.
Yeah, exactly.
I now know you need to know this, and you all need it too. Now let's figure out what it is. We only got a half an hour, and I want to move through these because I think all of the keys are really interesting. Let's talk a little bit about business connection.
Sure, yeah. So a lot of times folks, they start these SharePoint projects, right? And it's like, ooh, SharePoint is shiny, and we like it, and we want to do it. It's kind of like Web 2.0. Anyway, but business connection is about solving an actual business problem, one that has money tied to it with SharePoint. Rather than, our old internet is sucky and slow and ugly. Oh, okay, what problem does it have? Well, we said it's old and ugly, right? Yes, but that's not a reason to change it in a business sense. If you said, I can't respond to proposals quick enough, we're not communicating with the organization well enough, we have problems sharing documents securely outside the organization, Those are all reasons to do something with SharePoint, but just it's old and ugly. Not really enough.
Do you go the step further than that and actually start putting numbers around this? Like, we want to take, currently it takes 4 hours to put together a proposal. We want to get it down to two.
Yeah. And that's actually the next key, right? Is planning measurement. How do you measure the business impact that you're going to have?
Mm-hmm.
And it helps you make these decisions. Like, every large organization has an application backlog, right? These are the things you've got onboard developers,
yeah,
and they have a backlog. Well, how do you build your application backlog for what you want to do with SharePoint? Right? How do you decide this is more important than this other thing?
Mm-hmm.
And so you list out the business connections, and then you go and say, okay, this has this value. And a lot of times, so people get hung up on measurements have to be exact and precise.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, well, let's just do risk management. Because if you want to talk to business, talk risk management.
Right.
They know it. They love it. And it's frequency or probability if it's less than one.
Mm-hmm.
Times impact. Full stop. That's your risk.
Yeah.
Right? It's a good risk number. Okay. And yeah, the math majors will tell me that there's lots more to that, but whatever. We can work with this. Everybody can understand and conceptualize that. Then you put them in a list, you sort them descending by the total, and you go, these are the things we should work on first. And so measurement to me is not, necessarily the most precise. The other thing about measurement is, and so you, I know, do all this high-volume performance stuff, and
mm-hmm.
some of that stuff I do too, and we can get really hung up on SLAs, right?
Like, oh, sure.
This thing has to be four nines, right, or three nines, or whatever it is that your org does, and that's a great measurement for service level agreements,
mm-hmm.
right? We agreed we're going to be up this much or down this much is really what it is.
Yeah.
And then you can kind of up-level that a little bit, and you get up-leveled to it, and it's, well, I want to know how many people are using it, right? But that's not really what the business cares about, right? We're back to what value did we produce for the business?
Sure.
Did we get a new deal for it? Did we start responding quicker? How did we impact the business based on implementing SharePoint? And so that for me is where I try to get clients to for measurements is, how am I impacting the business? What did we actually do, or what can we expect?
Are you generally focused on a reducing of cost rather than a generation of profit with SharePoint? What's easier?
It really depends on the environment you're selling into.
Sure.
Certainly, the problem is nobody believes the reductions.
Right.
Nobody believes the time savings. Nobody believes you're going to find stuff better. Nobody believes those things.
Mm-hmm.
If you say... the one I like to use is an RFP. So if you're a larger organization, complex RFP response process, you responding to that RFP, the better you respond, the more likely you are to get it. And so what I talk about is shaving days or weeks in some cases off the RFP process, the response to it, so that you have a higher probability of getting the deal. You better understand it. It'll be more profitable. And then what we talk about is pre and post, what would we expect to see? So
mm-hmm.
we maybe win 30% now. We think we can win 35%. Well, 35% when we get 100 deals and the margins, you know, it's a $1 million deal and the margin's 10%. And you can add those numbers up pretty quick. And those are numbers that, for whatever reason, tend to be more believable.
Right. Well, they're hard return, and you can argue whether or not it was the RFP process that made a difference, but it's always interesting when new money's in the pocket, people get pretty comfortable with, you know, wanting to put it somewhere.
Right, yeah.
I mean, RFP process is an interesting one because the number of, you know, you always have a given delivery date where you're really struggling to make those dates, but I get that. I am a big believer, you know, I've done enough work on the business intelligence side that it's just, you know, the speed of applications matter when it comes to intuitive pursuits, trying to find information. But that is very tough to put a dollar figure to.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I try and look at processes, right? We don't look at, well, we're going to make people find information better. Really? How are you going to do that?
Well, how do you measure that? And, you know, how do you prove that you did it?
Right. Right.
I mean, I like getting down to hard goalposts because then you know, even though every goalpost is inherently artificial, at least you have a measurement you can show. We were here, we're now here, we have delivered what you asked.
Yeah, you don't have to exactly measure what you're doing, the thing, to just know that it's better.
Mm-hmm.
Douglas Hubbard had a book, How to Measure Anything, and one of the examples in it is Eratosthenes, and I probably butchered that name. Librarian, Library of Alexandria, found out that in another city 500 miles away, sun would hit the bottom of a well on a certain day at noon. And so, the same day, noon in Alexandria, he measured the angle of the shadow
mm-hmm.
off of a building. And from that, he determined the circumference of the Earth within about 3%. So that is kind of my reminder when we start talking about measurements, that sometimes you can get to reasonably good measurements, even if you're not directly trying to get exactly what you want. Right?
Sure.
Just knowing these factors are moving in the right direction.
Yeah, and I do believe in the concept of relative measure, too. We find that certainly in testing websites, that I may not be able to measure absolute numbers, but I can measure net improvement from this measurement to that measurement.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's often enough to just be able to measure the differences.
Yeah.
Do you really need to evangelize a SharePoint project? If it's great, won't everybody just use it?
Right. Build it and they will come. And if you build a better mousetrap, the world will beat a path to your door. I don't think those work.
No.
I mean, they sound good. Right? They're a nice soundbite. But they don't really work. You have to figure out... One of the problems I think people have is, first of all, an IT pro, generally speaking, relatively introverted.
Mm-hmm.
Right? These are not the people normally standing on roofs and screaming at the top of their lungs. Unless you're in Indy and it's May and there's a race. That's a completely different story.
Yeah.
But there's that. But I think one of the other problems is that we get so wrapped up in the shiny object. Like, we are on the latest version of SharePoint.
Mm-hmm.
And I have this ultra cool SAN. And we forget that the users, yeah, they don't care about any of that.
Sure.
Right? They want to get home to their kids at 5:30 instead of 7:30. And so when we evangelize, we really got to look at what do the business users want? What is it that they're trying to get out of this thing we call SharePoint?
In a way, aren't we just selling them? We've here's the solution we've built. Now, hopefully it fits the problem you have.
So I think, I do think of evangelization as sales and marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly marketing and a little bit of sales, where sales being direct one-on-one. But I think it's more like when we hand them a hammer and explain to them they can build a house.
Yeah.
Because SharePoint isn't what we've delivered. SharePoint is the foundation. It's the platform. It's what we allow you to do. It's how we allow you to solve your business mm-hmm. problems. And so that's the real... That's the real thing. Like, so we're selling them on what we've delivered, but it's more about making them aware that they have their own set of tools, that they can build their own solutions. I think that's what I'm trying to do with evangelization, is help them understand how to build.
Mm-hmm. Because in the end, you know, you still have a bit of a blank slate syndrome with SharePoint, especially when you're first starting out. Just getting those first projects in, getting those documents in place. It's great once it's there. You'd love it when it's all in there, but getting it going, it seems to be a real challenge.
Yeah, one of the things about social, and I'm like the skeptic when it comes to all things social,
mm-hmm.
And have been forever. And social always has a cold start problem.
Yeah.
Like when Amazon started doing ratings, nobody did them, right? When anybody does a new tagging or a new rating or a new anything, nobody uses them. And that's the trick with SharePoint, is find some wins that are easy to get, find some big things that help the business a lot that don't take a lot of time. And so I think we, sometimes when I'm doing evangelization, I will pick two or three pet projects and just do them.
That's exactly what I was thinking. It's like, you want a small team, a few people with a tough project that this tool can really help and end up being an exemplar for the rest of the organization to see, here's how it worked for these group of folks. You know, you can all do this.
Yep.
Then that, to me, you know, evangelism also has sort of an almost negative connotation these days. It's like, I'm trying to persuade you to do something you don't actually want to do. And you know, this idea of just a good test case of really, if we use the tools the right way, we get good results, seems a little more palatable to a lot of folks.
Yeah, I think evangelizations also get this word zealot attached to it. And that's kind of a, you know, a zealot being someone who doesn't realize there's another side. A lot of times what I try to do to help people just relax about the word is, you know, if we were trying to convince everybody to wear seatbelts, we're still manipulating them, mm-hmm. right? We're still trying to get them to wear seatbelts. But it's not because we're seatbelt manufacturers or that we have anything to gain. We're trying to get them to wear seatbelts because we don't want them to die in a car wreck.
Right.
And I think when I frame it that way, it becomes a little more palatable. Oh, it's okay to manipulate people as long as you're doing it for their good.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize that I've just, like, stepped into a big problem. Like, really, what's for their good?
But there is a side, you know, you just back up a couple of steps in the keys, this idea of, we had a shared vision, and this is the manifestation of the vision. You were talking to me about how long it took to make your RFPs. Here's a set of tools that, when you work with them, shorten that time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's keep moving on as we're working our way through this, because there is you talk about culture change as whole. Is that just change because of SharePoint, or is it just the fact that change happens?
So I wouldn't want SharePoint to be causing change.
Mm.
I would want SharePoint to be the effect of change.
Right.
It is, you know, business changes, right? If you were doing shipping in the 60s, the idea that you would let your customers look at where the package was at any point in time would have been absolutely crazy.
Right.
You know, if you do it today and you don't give them the ability to see it's on truck number 7 and it's 10 miles outside of Memphis, you're equally crazy.
Yeah.
And so business changes, and therefore, I think SharePoint is a catalyst, or the SharePoint project. I don't think SharePoint itself is as much a catalyst as somebody saying, hey, we know that we need to change the way we do business and get more efficient at it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, I think, is why these culture changes happen, is business really pushing into SharePoint and saying, hey, can you help drive this change forward faster? So the first one there, that honest evaluation, oh, that sucks. Even on a personal level, like when you have to really look inside yourself and go, okay, and I never get used to it,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's step number 4 in pretty much every 12-step program that there ever was.
Yeah.
Right? But it's a step that we rarely do in business, right? We don't look at, what do we do well? What don't we do well? I used to describe SharePoint projects as worse than an ERP project. And this is when ERP projects had a failure rate of something like 90%. Okay, it was never that high, but it felt that way.
Yeah. Well, only because we were able to disguise our failure of ERP projects with large piles of money.
Right. Don't look underneath that large pile of money. It might be an ERP system.
The fact that we eventually have to deliver something because it is what's running our business, the reality that it took 10 times longer and cost 10 times as much, we can ignore that because eventually we delivered something.
Right.
I mean, the reality is a collaboration tool, even a document management tool, can fail and the business will survive. ERP, generally not.
Yeah. Although I've seen a couple that have failed and the business survived. So.
Yeah.
That's more like phoenixes. But. the honest evaluation is, you know, every organization, even in IT, does stuff well and it does stuff poorly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might be great at requirements, but really suck at IT pro implementation.
Yeah.
I mean, not likely for your listeners, but you know, it could happen. It could be that in your organization, developers, you know, they don't understand how to spell SharePoint with a capital P.
Right.
Right. And there's every organization's going to have a weakness. And so this honest evaluation is rather than using hindsight to figure out where you're going to screw up, you look forward and say, you know, if I had $10 to invest, I think getting a information architect in would be a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't even spell information architecture. And most organizations can't. We fired all the librarians 10 years ago. We did.
It's true.
Why did we do that?
I don't know. We didn't know what they were doing. Now we know and we can't find them.
Right, exactly. They all went to do something else. I hope they went to sell coconuts on a beach somewhere.
Yeah, they're happier wherever they are.
They're happier.
Just not just saying shush and stacking books. Talking about reframing your relationship to your business, that's an interesting concept. Is it really feasible?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's a polarizing thing. We land in this spot where you become an order taker,
mm-hmm.
right? Like the business says, I want a Big Mac with fries.
Yeah.
You deliver them a Big Mac with fries. And then I think on the other end of the spectrum, you've got these folks that go, I don't have to talk to the business. I know what they want. Really? You're kidding, right? No, or actually what I normally hear is, well, the business doesn't know what they want. And I love that because I can respond with, of course they don't. But they do know what problems they have.
Yes.
You know, and if you talk to them about solutions and problems and you get those two things together, it's like peanut butter and chocolate,
mm-hmm.
right? You got a good combination here.
Good things will happen.
Good things will happen. And so I think that it's slow, but you have to build trust. And if you can build trust, and there are ways of building trust, and in fact, the psychology DVD, I talk about that, but building trust allows you to get to the point where you can have these open conversations where the business comes in and they say, these are the problems I have.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, jumping back to your earlier point is, honestly, I'm more nervous when the business comes in and says, here's the solution I want.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And it's like, oh, so we're actually further away from an answer at this point. We still have to get back to the problems you have.
Right. Yeah. When the business brings you a solution, you know you're in trouble. You do.
We have miles to go.
We have miles to go. We got to backtrack and get to what are the requirements. And the really scary part is they don't have requirements.
Yeah. They just have a solution.
Right. They don't even know what the real problem was they were trying to solve. I'm like, how do you do that?
How did you get here?
Right. Well, there's this vendor. He's really cool, and I like him. And like, yeah, but
a golf game and three martinis later, I know I have the solution.
Exactly. Exactly. And so yeah. So you know, I think that you can reframe the business relationship if you can start to build and earn that trust with the business that if they bring you a problem, you're going to work with them, keyword with,
mm-hmm.
to find a solution, you know, and you're going to try stuff and you're going to say, hey, would this work and won't this work? And what do you think about that? And that's just not the relationship that IT has had. So if you kind of force some of those things to happen and you make sure that you pick them on places where the outcomes are going to be really, really good,
mm-hmm.
then you can start to kind of turn the big aircraft carrier and get it moving in the right direction where, you know, you do have this open dialogue about business bringing you problems and IT going, well, I can solve it, but it's this much and this long and, you know, and we'll leave this thing over here. It won't get quite solved. And so it's just it's a different way of working with the business than most organizations have today.
And I'm finding more and more as our tools are getting better, we're less of the McDonald's. We don't have to do a lot of you want fries with that anymore. It goes a lot faster. And I think as IT, we have an opportunity to do more instrumentation of the business and occasionally bring potential solutions to them. Hey, I've watched your behavior here. We could reorganize this to be more effective.
So I think that works really well with people who are really in tune and are really paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that's a very mature IT group
yeah.
that is that embedded with their IT. And in a really large organization, you have business unit IT, right? And that's what they do, is they're embedded with the business unit and they keep bringing solutions mm-hmm. to the business. And I think in the mid-sized organizations, you've got to be pretty insightful to be seeing the business struggling with something and go, I think I can help. And I think it's the right place to be in, but I think it's also pretty difficult to get there without a lot of conscious work.
Now, you also are concerned about platitudes in the sense of people aren't committed to the problem, that they don't push hard enough to actually see the tension in it?
Yeah, so platitude, so dull, flat, or trite remark, especially if it's profound. And so the first thing is everybody's seen platitudes, mm-hmm. right? It's the corporate mission statement.
Yep.
Like, I don't care what your corporate mission statement is, it's a platitude, mm-hmm. because it has to be. All right, I'm going to pick on you again. Mm-hmm. So I'll bet that in the last 24 hours, you have used at least one, if not two platitudes.
Okay.
Do you believe me?
Knowing the way I speak, almost certainly, but I'm curious which two you think I've used.
Well, the first one that everybody uses, and I use this because everybody does it, mm-hmm. right? You go up to somebody, and somebody you know, somebody from church or from a different job or whatever, and you go, hey, how are you? And you do not care what the answer
no.
is.
You're expecting fine, and when you get more than that, you're annoyed.
Right, well, and you want to run away.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, man.
I'm so sorry I said that.
Yeah, I'm not talking to him again. I'm just, like, if I see him, I'm turning the other way. You know, because I didn't want to know that. I was being polite.
You know, the other side of that is funny, too. When you actually want to know how someone is, and you're serious about when you say that, you make them really uncomfortable.
Right. You're like, no, really? Like, how are you? And they're like, no, that's a platitude.
Yeah.
I can't answer a platitude. Yeah. The other one, and this one cuts a little deeper, but I got to tell you, I do this all the time. I talk to folks about this all the time, and I still do this one. It drives me nuts. So what I find is most people have said to spouse, child, boyfriend, girlfriend, mother, father, relation, somebody that you care about, and you've said, I love you. And you have done it without thinking about what exactly you mean when mm-hmm. you say it.
Yep.
Like, if we think that collaboration is a hard word to define, try defining love.
Yeah.
All kind of philosophers have screwed that one up for years. And anyway.
Lots of different interpretations.
Yeah, lots of different interpretations. And, you know, when you say I love you to somebody, rarely do you think about what exactly do I mean by that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we get platitudes because platitudes are what happens when you get exhausted. The thing about a platitude is you can't argue with a platitude.
Right.
Right? Like, I want to save the world. Really? I think that's a dumb idea. How do you do that? Like, you can't argue with a platitude.
Yeah.
So I think what happens is we get into these discussions called requirements, and we just want them to be over.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we're trying to get to an answer or what they want, and eventually, sure, world peace, end world hunger, make the company $1 billion. I don't care.
Yeah. All good.
All good, whatever.
But it's so hard to stop a meeting and say, all right, we're out of juice on this. Let's leave it where we are, and we'll come back in a few days when we have more energy and more thought, because everybody wants to have a good conclusion.
Right. Yeah, everybody wants to end on a happy note.
Right.
Alfred Sloan, and I'm going to get this quote wrong because I don't have it in front of me, but former CEO of General Motors said something along the lines of, gentlemen, I see we're all in complete agreement about this point, so I propose that we adjourn until we have further time to consider what this is and to develop disagreement about it.
The fact that we all agree means we're clearly not thinking about this anymore.
Right. We're not applying more thought to it,
mm-hmm.
Which I thought that was beautiful. And like I say, I probably misquoted him, but it's the gist of it.
Sure. I think there's also this concept of acceptable tension, that we will disagree here on the, you know, and but we'll hit a balance point and it's acceptable.
Yeah, I tend to talk, so there's definitely acceptable tension. I tend to find that people don't understand natural tension.
Mm-hmm.
And so here's natural tension, right? This is IT pro versus developer.
Yep.
There is natural tension here.
Sure.
And everybody's like, the developers and the IT pros, they don't get along, and I don't know what I can do about it. And I'm like, well, you know, goal them the same way would be a good start.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Well, IT pros are gold on uptime.
Yep, reliability.
Right? Reliability. I don't want to take the system down. Now, what are developers gold on? New features.
Yep.
which is change. Mm-hmm. Change and reliability are not the same thing. In fact, they're on opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yes.
You know, and so when you say, my developers and my IT pros, they don't get along, I'm like, duh.
Good.
You know, I mean, it can be good. It can be bad, too. But
yeah.
At least acknowledge the fact that you've put these people in conflict with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then have them work the tension in the middle, right? Work that conflict to work together. And they each have got to give something up, right? You got to give up a little bit of reliability to get a little bit of features. And IT pros get that,
yeah.
Right? Because you've got to do upgrades, right? Nobody's still running MS Mail 6.
Yeah, and actually having an app incredibly reliable because nobody's using it is not a good outcome.
That is also not a good outcome, right? So that tension and managing it to a healthy range,
mm-hmm.
is really critical. And that's what, you know, managing platitudes. You're still going to have some. Because you have to. Like, you just have to move on.
Sure.
And if you don't take them, you're going to get deadlocked. But at least when you take them, you need to know you're taking them.
Yeah. And recognize when you're not actually getting full engagement on things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pieces are being left behind.
That's not something we get training on, right?
No, I agree. And it gets overlooked. And it'll come and bite you later. So, I mean, just acknowledging we're out of energy on these things, so we're going to leave them off and come back on them later. Not a bad outcome either. I think we take too much on in some of these planning meetings. It's like, if you can get one good agreement, you know, one good, you know, seriously worked problem done, you've had a good meeting. The fact that you wanted five in that meeting just means you were diluted.
Right.
Coming down to our last few minutes here, Robert, I want to cover off these simple things that people miss.
Yeah. So, write defaults.
Mm-hmm.
This is okay. Everybody knows this. If you want people to go to your intranet homepage to start,
yep.
Set a group policy and make their homepage the intranet homepage.
Yeah.
Don't you know, let them go to MSN or whatever it is. If you want them to save Word files that they create into their My Site, strange idea, but maybe you ought to make the default when they hit File Save, their My Site.
Yeah.
And I get it. We all get busy and we don't think about it and it's overlooked. And that's just what these are, right? It's just something you overlook. And then the other one is imperfect solutions.
Mm-hmm.
We've done ourselves a disservice, I think, in some ways, where we have built this idea that when we solve a problem, we have to solve it perfectly. Perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
The only option has to solve it absolutely perfectly. You know, military grade specification, 1/1,000,000th of a mil or something. And we don't need that. The business problems fall on the power rule just like everything else. Pareto rule, 80-20 rule, whatever you want
sure.
to call it. It is, you can get 80% of the value for 20% of the investment.
Mm-hmm.
So go do that. And
yeah.
then do it again. And again. And don't worry about, I think, you know, we were talking about ERP systems a little bit ago. You know, they got hung up because they always were focused on that 1%. They were always focused on the exception.
Yeah.
Well, don't focus on the exception. Focus on what you can do right 80% of the time
yeah.
as a human.
Focus on the maturity behavior, actually. And I think in the IT world especially, our culture tends towards those perfect solutions. That's what we're always after.
Yeah. Well, because it's not, you cannot brag about something that you did that's an imperfect solution.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, your ego does not get well fed for, you know, I made this Access database, and I know Access is evil. But for this case, it's not storing any data, it's just reporting.
It's sufficient.
It's sufficient, right? It's what is needed. And you can't brag about that to your friend.
Yeah.
Right? Like saying, I built this monumental system that does shipping, and it ships to multiple countries in multiple ways, and blah, blah, blah. That, you can brag about.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not to say that, you know, we're all ego centered maniacs. Oh, wait, maybe I am saying that. but we all have an ego.
Sure.
We all want to be happy about what we do, and this imperfect solutions kind of works against that.
Totally reasonable. I'm also a big believer in the whole Tom Peters ready, fire, aim. More important to get a partial solution out there and correct it based on people's actions rather than to debate and debate and debate and never deliver.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So sooner out the door, the better. And then be prepared to go back and do an honest evaluation of what you've got and make it better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Robert, any final words?
No, I mean, we've got to do this again. I've got all kinds of psychology stuff.
Oh, we just got warmed up. I'm with you. And we were headed down the stand-up comedy discussion before the show, which I think we could do a whole other half hour on, but we'll have to look at that later on. I will make sure a link to your 9 keys to SharePoint success is in the show notes so folks can look it up. And you also have a set of DVDs on the topic?
I do. There's a DVD for the 9 keys. And then I mentioned a couple of things about it, the psychology for SharePoint adoption engagement.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll make sure you get a link to that too.
Fantastic. Robert Bowe, thanks so much for coming on the show. And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.